Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Nick Schwert with you. Cody back with us on Thursday. Nate Taylor going to join us coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour here in about 30 minutes or so. Real quick, before we even get into how teams are playing in December and how much does it really matter at this point in time, it's been driving me crazy the last 15 minutes or so. We were talking about Lincoln Riley leaving USC. We were talking about Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame to go to LSU. And these are always tricky spots. There's no right way, I think, ultimately to handle it, to please everybody. And I'm not saying Brian Kelly is this great person by any means, and that people shouldn't be upset with how anytime a coach leaves is handled. It's unfortunately how the business works, where Brian Kelly last night sent a group text telling the team, sorry you heard on social media, I'm leaving. I'm going to meet with you guys tomorrow at 7 a.m. Like, that's not ideal either. I get it. This morning, he did meet with them in person at 7 a.m., and the meeting lasted for 11 minutes. And I continue to see reaction like that's such a terrible thing. Do you actually think the players that he just told that I don't think I can win a national championship with you, basically, do you really think they want to sit around and what, sit down and chat for 2 hours? They probably want
just
his
really, just
they,
really just peel back all the layers of that onion.
Like, they want him to break down. Like, yeah, here's actually the bonus I get for going here. They're actually buying me this house down in LA in Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge, really great food down there too. Really love it. No, they don't give a damn. They probably hate the guy's guts right now. Well, he bailed on them. They're in position to go to the college football playoff.
He's got a PowerPoint prepared. He goes, well, guys, just let me just hear me out real quick. All right, I've prepared a quick 30-minute presentation. Let's start off first with the recruiting rankings for next year. Notice this hot spot down in Louisiana. That's what I'm going to be walking into.
I just don't know what. To me, it's a lose-lose all the way around. If he would have not called the meeting at 7 a.m. and just did it over Zoom, he'd be getting crushed for saying, oh, you couldn't even have met with them in person for 10 minutes. You just did it over Zoom. So what does he do? He meets with them in person for 11 minutes. Well, he could have just done that over Zoom. Why did he even meet? Just, it was a lose-lose all the way around. People are upset. I get it. But it's just the reaction to me is a bit crazy.
He should have let them hold a team vote, right? Majority wins. 51% say I go, 49% say I stay.
Look, it sucks all the way around. He's bailing on his players. Flat out he is. Unfortunately, this is the business of college sports. Not right now. It's always been this way. The coaches can say whatever they want, and they will still bail on you. Nobody's saying for the players to be happy about it, but just the reaction to a meeting only being 11 minutes, I just don't know what you expected. There's a lot of cases where the coach sometimes doesn't even meet with the players. I at least give him some little ounce of credit for being able to stand in front of them and say something. There's a couple coaches that are not even willing to do that. So Brian Kelly going, as we know, to LSU. We'll keep updating you on where things are at with that and the college football coaching carousel, which is completely crazy at this point in time. It is about to turn to December in the NFL calendar as we get to week 13. And right now in December, man, this is when you start to find out what more and more of these teams are, right? You got the Patriots and Bills who are going to play each other twice in the month of December. We're going to learn a lot more about these teams, and how they're playing in December generally is how we're going to view them heading into the playoffs.
Are you sure, though? Are you sure that's actually what we're going to do? Because I feel like we say that every year, and then so often it doesn't end up mattering.
I think it does this year more than others in the AFC, because flat out, if you're not peaking, if you're not playing well in December, then you might not be in the playoffs because everything's so jumbled right now.
Yeah, but that's different. So if we're talking about needing to play yourself into the playoff picture, well, of course.
Yeah.
You need to start racking up wins. But when we talk about teams that we view as contenders,
mm-hmm.
and the teams right now, like look at the Rams, they're sort of faltering right now. The Cowboys are sort of faltering. And we're saying, okay, you know what? You're going to be in the playoffs, I think, unless the wheels completely fall off. Like I believe there are, you know, a handful of teams in both conferences. You can say, okay, these are playoff teams. I don't know where they'll be at, but they're going to the playoffs. But if we're talking about, are you going to win it all? Eventually, we're going to talk ourselves out of some of these teams. People are already starting to do it with the Rams. Some people are starting to do it with the Bills or the Ravens. So that the idea that you need to peak at the right time if you want to have momentum going into the playoffs, I think that is an absolute facade. I don't think there's anything to it. I know that the last 2 years would maybe make you rethink that.
Yeah.
Because
the Bucs and the Chiefs, man,
the
went
Bucs
on runs.
And the Chiefs both went undefeated in the months of December. But over the past decade, That's just two. And it's only happened three times where teams went unbeaten in December and then went on to win the Super Bowl. Conversely, six of the last 10 Super Bowl champions lost two or more games in the month of December. So there's a lot more precedent that you could actually stumble, sort of tread water in the month of December and then just get hot in the playoffs and win it all than there is to say that you need to get hot right now.
This year, to me, though, is a little bit different. Like, you're right. Typically, if we look at, and this is why it probably fits this year more the NFC, you know, than the AFC. Like, we look at the contenders, and I think people do get in this pattern of saying, well, this team is the hot, you know, this is the hot team, the hot contender heading in the playoffs. They're playing right. I don't like how X team is playing. I think if that team is just far out, that favorite heading into the playoffs in general. Like last year, the Chiefs were still the favorite to come out of the AFC. The year before, even with Patrick Mahomes, they were the favorites at that point in time heading into it. Like those teams, they're probably going to find a way. They're probably going to find a way where it's more wide open, I think, is where it does matter. So it depends how wide open do you think the NFC is? How wide open do you think the AFC is? If it's not as wide open, then the peaking part may not matter as much. But in a year where it's way more wide open, it might be something that's a little bit beneficial. At that point, like to me in the AFC, no team anytime soon is locking up a playoff spot. No team's locking up their division anytime soon. I think that the soonest might be the Chiefs in the next 3 weeks, actually.
I agree with that in the sense that where the Bucs had to play four games to win the Super Bowl last year, I love when people will look at that and say, see, seeding's overrated. Home field advantage. Like, no, because if the Bucs had the option of having that extra week off and getting to play every game in Tampa before the Super Bowl, I'm going to go ahead and guess they would have taken that. They're not sitting there saying, well, it was that extra game that we got to play against Washington. That's what made us realize that we were super. No, every team still wants the bye. They all want home field advantage. But that's why I think this applies more in the NFC than the AFC. Because the AFC, yes. Everybody's still playing for that one seed. And in the NFC, they are as well. But I feel like there's more clear separation in the NFC than there is in the AFC. After those top four or five teams in the NFC, like then we get by the time you get down to Minnesota and San Francisco.
Look, Washington currently is occupying the seventh seed in the NFC. They were 4-6 before winning last night against a terrible Seahawks team that's clearly going to have to reset.
So, like, we know who the Habs are in that conference. We know it's the Packers and the Cardinals and the Cowboys and the Rams and the Bucks, and then it's everybody else. Whereas in the AFC, do we have any freaking clue where the separation is? Is there any? Are there any tiers in the AFC, or is it just one jumbled mess? Because that's why I think you're right. In that sense, in the AFC, it's not so much about needing to peak for some sort of narrative. It's just about you need to play for that one seed and play for a first-round bye.
Because if you do, let's say you buy into it, though. Let's play along, and let's say you buy in truly to, hey, you have to be peaking. Because right now, the Titans are heading in the wrong direction. They got so many injuries. I'm worried about our bet now because
I'm feeling
you should. You and I have a bet on the field or the Titans to be the number one seed. We set it like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think. And the Titans have like nobody healthy, and I don't like it at all. It looks like it's not. I don't feel very confident anymore because of that. I still think they're going to win the AFC South. I don't believe the Colts will catch them on that, although it's getting very interesting. And so, okay, they're clearly not peaking at the right time talking about the Titans. Even though the Colts just lost the Bucs, a lot of people would say, oh, the Colts, they're in general peaking at the right time. The Patriots, they're peaking at the right time. The Chiefs, they're peaking at the right time. Like the Buffalo Bills, They've been wavering a little bit, but did that win against the Saints suddenly spark their offense the same way the Chiefs win against the Raiders on Sunday night, spark the Chiefs offense perhaps to get things going? These are all, like, to me, the peaking for some of these teams is going to matter. Now, it's if you were to separate of, I ultimately in a Super Bowl championship, how much does it matter? Or how much does it matter to actually go on a little bit of a run in the playoffs? Because the numbers you brought up, what, 3 of the last 10 Super Bowl champs went undefeated in December? That's the Super Bowl champs. I would just be curious, like, about winning a playoff game too. Because the Steelers, we all know they were heading in the wrong direction last year, heading into the playoffs. Nobody believed in them. They were heading in the wrong direction. They lost the final week, and then they were abysmal in the opening round of the playoffs. They were done. Right, so that didn't factor in the Super Bowl, but that was a team going in the wrong direction, as we all know, and they were one and done in the playoffs.
I think that's less about it's all about how you perceive it.
Sure,
were the Steelers a team, quote, ever, trending in the right direction, or were they just a bad team? And at the end of the season, as opposed to just trending downwards, they were showing their true colors.
Fair.
And that they weren't really a legit contender.
True.
At all.
Nobody bought into the Steelers' schedule last year, and people questioned it, and it turned out to be very valid. Just interesting to look at that again. 6 of the last 10 Super Bowl champs suffered 2 or more losses in December. We'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour coming up in 20 minutes here on Cody and Gold. So Christian McCaffrey yesterday, the news came out, he's hurt once again. He's done for the season. He's got an ankle injury. He only played in 3 games a season ago. Look, we've seen running back injuries right here in Kansas City recently. Clyde just got back from an injury. We've had plenty of conversations about the Chiefs picking him in the first round and what kind of production have you got. And the day after the Chiefs drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I said, look, I actually don't hate the pick that you draft a running back in the first round. What you have to be accepting of is if you're going to take a running back high in the draft or whatever, you cannot give that guy the next contract. Just can't happen. Now, if another team drafts that running back high and they don't want to give him a contract, you can be that next team because that means the dollar amount's less or you don't have as much invested. So Christian McCaffrey, we all agree, when healthy, is one of the best backs in football. He's dynamic, passing game, running game, but he flat out can't stay healthy. And you just gave him, if you're Carolina, a massive contract. Now, they have a potential out in 2023, so I would imagine the way things are trending, they will take that out. And guess when that aligns? It aligns when Clyde's a free agent, so that'd be fun.
And by the way, Christian McCaffrey is not an anomaly. I think it was Warren Sharp last night who tweeted out, the 5 highest paid running backs in the NFL are all currently injured.
Yeah, you cannot give out long-term extensions to running backs. If you're the team that drafted him, this goes for Clyde. It goes for Christian McCaffrey.
Zeke Elliott, Kamara, Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, Barkley's hurt. Now, he's still on a rookie deal, but he was just drafted at top 5.
Pick.
Yeah, so his contract
he's still
is
one of the highest paid backs.
You can't do it. And we had Christian McCaffrey on the show. It's probably been we actually had a great conversation with him. Really, seriously, really liked having him on the show. He was
still
awesome.
Talks about it to this day.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. I'm sure he knows exactly who we are. He was on with the Tyrann Mathieu Radiothon. We had him on. He was awesome. And I asked him a question. I said, at that point in time, there was a narrative going around, you know, that running backs don't matter, essentially. And I asked him, like, are running backs important? And look, I know he's a running back, but this was his answer at the time.
Yeah, I think that's an asinine statement. I think when you look around the league and you look at what the running back position has meant to certain teams, I don't know when that narrative started happening because it used to be, you know, the running back and the quarterback position were the highest tier guys on the field. You know, I look at guys who I looked up to, guys like Emmitt Smith, guys like Ladainian Thomas. I mean, I don't know, Emmitt Smith might have played, you know, he played 12 plus years. These other guys played, you know, long years and were the, you know, at the forefront of the team's most important players.
So that was Christian McCaffrey on this show about a year and a half or so ago.
By the way, was this before or after he signed the contract extension?
Before, I believe.
Because that, I feel like the timing of that is important because, I mean, I get it. Like, Christian McCaffrey's a little biased in this conversation anyway.
Of course.
He was in the moment of trying to get a massive deal, which he got.
Yeah, but like, look, running backs, nobody said doesn't have a role. But again, and he's now another example because he just can't stay healthy, that you just cannot fork over the type of cash for that position. And you really shouldn't be drafting one in the top 10 or top 15 of the draft for that matter either. Some people would say not even the first round. I don't have as much of an issue with the drafting a guy in the first round as long as you don't give the second contract. Like, I hope Clyde is great the next 2 or 3 years here in Kansas City. I hope that's the case. But I he can be dominant. I don't want to give him a contract extension because history continues to tell us it's a terrible decision.
Yeah, I think the overall, like the idea that you can't draft one in the first round, that makes less sense than the dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was drafted in the first round. Clyde Edwards-Helaire isn't even in the top 20 in highest paid running backs in the league. I care way more about salary hit, how much this guy actually affects the bottom line, than I do the draft equity. Because you're right. You cannot find me a team that gave a running back a massive deal and would say they would do it again. You cannot find one example in the modern history of the NFL. Every single team who has handed one of those contracts out regrets it in the long term. Remember when the Todd Gurley deal happened and it never made sense at the time?
Yeah, and that backfired very quickly. They didn't even have
instantly.
I mean, that was
instantly.
You know, 8 months later, Todd Gurley, never the same player again, ends up getting cut outright.
And you know what, Kamara, it's not like Kamara's been injured often. Same thing with Derrick Henry. Like, those guys aren't injured often. And this could happen to any position, right? This could happen. You could give out a long-term contract to anybody, and then all of a sudden it's a freak injury and they're out. So, like, one injury does not mean that contract wasn't
it's
worth it.
It's just McCaffrey in 2 years, you're going to play three games
together,
for you.
Right? Like, Derrick Henry, that's not an issue. Alvin Kamara, that's not an issue. But you put it in the context of all running backs taking up big chunks of their salary cap and almost all of them being injured, it starts to look like a much bigger problem. And you heard him ask the question there in the interview. I don't know when this happened. It happened when we started looking at things a little bit deeper and realizing that running backs do not affect winning and losing as much as quarterbacks in a lot of other positions.
And right now, here's an example that's happening. Look, Jonathan Taylor, second round pick. Jonathan Taylor has been incredible this year. Jonathan Taylor can be incredible again next year, Nick, and can be incredible in his third year. The Colts will be making a mistake if they give him a massive, you know, 3-4 year extension.
Which they're gonna, by the way. They're going to.
Because of how dominant he is. Unless you are going to be one of those generational type of talents, right? You know, you're gonna be an Adrian Peterson, you're gonna be a Derrick Henry for that matter. Then you just can't do it. But you're right. I mean, it will trend in that. If Jonathan Taylor does this for another year, then Jonathan Taylor, yeah, they're going to, because they're saying, we're not going to let that guy walk. Fans won't want them to walk, but it's actually the right decision.
Because the difference between a guy like Jonathan Taylor versus Quentin Nelson, right, left guard, not thought of as a value position, is when they hand Quentin Nelson a contract extension that makes him probably the highest paid left guard in NFL history, there's going to be a level of certainty that that guy is going to play for your organization until he's 34. And with Jonathan Taylor, you'll be lucky for him to make it to 28.
I think you just have to almost, and agents won't go for it, but you almost have to just, if you're going to do the extension, it's got to be so incentive-based. Like you're like, we'll sign you to X amount of contract, but if you want the big money, there's just going to be loaded with massive incentives. Hey, if you play, you know, 14 or more games this year, it's X amount of money. If you hit this, I mean, to me, that's the only way I would even consider giving a rookie running back we drafted a massive extension after his rookie deal is up, or a year before his rookie deal is up. It's the only way. It's just got to be loaded with incentives where he can still get to X amount of money, but we're not guaranteeing that. If you say, well, the player won't go for that, then I think there's going to continue to be a trend, though, where teams eventually will figure this out and not give those type of big paydays.
Just for entertainment's sake, can I list off a few running backs who are making more on an annual basis than Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Yeah.
Gus Edwards.
Hurt. Out for the season.
Jalen Ricard.
Yeah, just a guy.
Philip Lindsay.
He just got picked up by the Dolphins.
Yeah,
he got cut by the Texans.
Jamal Williams, the backup running back for the Lions. Raheem Mostert. And Devontae Booker. All of those guys making more money than Edwards-Helaire. So, Spin Zone, what a great value pick by the Chiefs grab Edwards-Helaire in the first round.
Yeah, I have no problem with the first round pick. It's the next contract with any of these guys. That's the issue. Is the next contract for any of them.
Because Edwards-Helaire right now, I mean, he's got a little under $10 million in total guaranteed. He's making about $2.7 million annually. That's nothing.
Yeah.
It's chump change. But the second he starts asking for $10 million, that's when you've got an issue.
Trash of the day.
All right, Trash of the Day brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Just point and it is gone. We mentioned Mike Tomlin earlier in the show after the USC job was filled and his comments from a month or so ago. Well, the Steelers certainly heading, talking about a team that's not peaking, heading in the wrong direction. The Steelers, an embarrassing loss to the Bengals, got blown out on Sunday. They're in a bad spot. Big Ben continues to look old. So naturally, the reporters in Pittsburgh are asking players, like, what can you do to help improve this Steelers team? Maybe what you could do to help improve Steelers practice. Chase Claypool suggested playing music. Quote, we have music in the warm-ups and that, so it's fun. People are dancing, having fun. So I think maybe music would make practice more fun and a little more up-tempo.
You know, I think he's right.
He also said it's something he's been asking for since college when he didn't have any music during practice. But he acknowledged Mike Tomlin's been doing a lot longer than him. That's the key.
So Chase Claypool, even in his Notre Dame games, was asking for music during practice. Mm-hmm. And Brian Kelly said no. Then he got to the league. And he said, hey, coach,
right.
I never got to listen to music during practices back in college. Do you think we could start playing music during practice? And Mike Tomlin says, no, this is a guy desperate to hear some tunes. And Chase Claypool's been a pretty productive player first 2 years in the league. I think he's onto something. I think that would fix everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at it. I mean, we can joke about, you know, all we want, about how bad the Lions are. Dan Campbell, he had it wrong. Like, biting kneecaps? Chewing kneecaps? Just start playing music in practice. I think what happened in Kansas City, we brought in an ascension guru, and we brought in an astrologist to figure out what needed to happen for Mahomes and the Chiefs to play better. Clearly, the speakers were broken at practice in September.
Can you imagine if this is just playing in the background during Steelers practice?
That's all it was. You just got to play music at practice. Things will start going better for your team. Madonna.
I actually think it would be great. Do you think Mike Tomlin heard that quote from Chase Claypool and then called his agent and said, you know what? On second thought, why don't you reach back out to USC and let them know I am interested? His agent's like, I got bad news for you,
this
Mike.
This seems like a comment that we would have heard if Juju Smith-Schuster was still healthy and active. Like, to me, this would have been something, a comment I would have expected from Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, we need some more practice. We need more
music.
What is
with
that
wide receiver room, by the way?
They know how to find him, though, man. The talent's
they
great.
They do know how to find him, but also they seem like the most annoying, insufferable group of receivers in the league.
I feel like any of the great or very talented, because I won't put Claypool in great category, any of the very talented upper-end wide receivers, they're all a little weird, aren't they? They all have, like, that's just the makeup. All a little weird, all have a pretty big personality for the most part. All right, Tyreek Hill, his personality. Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster, Odell Beckham Jr.,
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting that some great wide receivers have an affinity for diva-like personalities?
Yeah, I know.
I actually think we should explore this more coming up in the next segment.
Yeah, I know. It's stunning that there's a
chance. Because when you think about it, man, Terrell Owens. You know, nobody ever talked about his off-the-field stuff, but he was a little bit of a distraction. Randy Moss. I think we're on to something here, man.
It's almost like in order to be a top wide receiver, you gotta be a little out there.
I mean, Travis Kelce's never been shy of off the field attention. Maybe that's what we need. That's the problem with the Chiefs' current wide receiver room. Not enough guys are out there commanding attention off the field.
That's right.
That's why there's no reliable third option. I think we cracked the code.
You're welcome, Brett Veach. Set you up for success. Future drafts, wide receiver position. Like, I expect them to draft a wide receiver. There's the answer. But first of all, get the speakers fixed to practice.
Yeah.
Especially in Pittsburgh. Solves everything.
So the coaches who play music during practice, they'll say, this is how, you know,
I think the Chiefs, we've learned the Chiefs botched their pitch to Juju Smith-Schuster in the offseason. Like, Andy had the right idea, it seemed like.
He showed up and there was no Madonna playing.
Well, because Andy texted the Vince Lombardi trophy, right, to Juju Smith-Schuster to try to get him to come to Kansas City. All along, it should have just been like, look, we play music at our practice.
That's right. And we play all the hits. Madonna, Billy Joel, Billy Idol, Billie Eilish, all the Billies. You want to hear them? Come to Kansas City.
That's the trash of the day. Coming up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour. Post bye week, and I have one guy who's poised for a breakout.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio. Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
Chiefs Red Half Hour brought to you by E. Edwards Workwear, proud partner of Carhartt Clothing. So the Chiefs coming off the bye week. And we know Andy Reid, as we pointed out yesterday's show, Andy Reid post-bye week, fantastic, as good as anybody in the NFL. So I was thinking of a few players, and there's one that stands out in particular that, all right, it's not the second half of the season. We've already reached that point. But who's poised for a post-bye week and really post-bye the rest of the season breakout? And we were just talking about running backs, and that's where I'm headed for this. Like, to me, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is one of those Chiefs players that's poised for a breakout the rest of the season. A lot of it has to do with he's been hurt, as we know. He just had his first game back against the Dallas Cowboys. Now he plays in a game. He gets an extra week off in between. Should be fully good to go here for the home stretch of the season. I thought he looked very fresh in the snaps that he got against Dallas. He seemed to look fresher than some of the other guys out on the field, as he should, as he hasn't played a whole lot this season. And so I am expecting him to have a big, I'll call it for him, second half of the season, post bye week of the season. We know that this Chiefs offense made an effort right out of the gate in that Cowboys game to give the ball to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, we know that was something that they wanted to do the first six plays or so of the game. What, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Tyreek Hill both had the first five, six touches of the game, both in the run game and in the passing game for Clyde as well. So he's a guy, for me, that is poised for a post bye week breakout. If you just look at, you know, the type of season that Clyde has had so far, and it's ultimately altered by the injuries, but last week against Dallas, or 2 weeks ago against Dallas, 12 rushes, 63 yards, 5.25 yards per carry. You know my feeling on him in the receiving game. I think these running backs need to be getting 5+ receptions a game. He had 2 on 2 targets for 13 yards. We'll see if that increases. But he's averaging 5.2 yards per carry. Prior to the injury in that Philadelphia game, or in the Buffalo game, 7.29 yards a carry in the Philly game, 5.8 yards per carry against the Chargers. Let's not forget, he was playing really, really well before he suffered the knee injury against the Bills. And then last week had a nice performance on the average yards per carry. So I think Clyde is primed to have a big post-bye week breakout the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think the way they utilize him now is going to be interesting, because when he was playing well early in the season, that was before the Chiefs had sort of evolved their offense. And now that they are relying more on passes to the running backs and check downs and those little 5-yard routes, that's kind of Clyde's bread and butter. That was never what we thought of Darrell Williams. Now, Darrell's still maybe that guy on third down because they trust him to be a blocker more. But knowing that the Chiefs are going to pass it on first and second down, that's still a ton of opportunity for Clyde, especially after another week of being able to rest and come back. But the guy that I'm actually really excited to watch the rest of the season is Willie Gay Jr., because he was, once again, in training camp, one of the names we heard the most buzz about, and we didn't see him for the first month of the season. And even the first two games that we saw him, they sort of eased him back in. Back, I think it was against Baltimore and against Washington. But since that Washington game, so for the past month and a half, go look at the snap counts. Willie Gay Jr. is the unequivocal number one inside linebacker on this team. And now, coming off that game against Dallas, a dominating defensive performance, he was the best player on the field for the Chiefs defense. I mean, save Chris Jones. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I immediately walked that back. But Willie Gay Jr. was incredible, and his closing speed and his ability to move laterally and get out and finish those plays on the edge is something that the Chiefs have been missing for the past 3 years. He provides that. It wouldn't shock me whatsoever if by the time we get to the end of the regular season, we're looking at Willie Gay Jr. as a pillar for the future of the Chiefs defense. If he's the type of guy where next year we're saying, okay, this is somebody you build around, can he be the Chiefs' starting inside linebacker for the next decade?
The only question I have about Willie Gay is always his health. That's it. Like, as the player, I like the draft pick at the time. You know, as we've discussed with Cody on the show, my feelings about the two linebackers that they've drafted, Nick Bolton and Willie Gay Jr. I do believe they will be starters and key pieces for the next 4 years on rookie contracts, and it's going to be beneficial to not have to worry about the linebacker spot for years to come. I think your point about, you know, athleticism from Willie Gay Jr., yeah, other than the last linebacker, probably Derek Johnson, the last time you had a linebacker that, you know, sideline to sideline could give you what he's able to bring to you. The question for him to achieve what you're talking about, he just has to stay healthy. I think other than that, he's going to do that if he stays healthy. The ability and his performance, yes, the defensive line is where we focus so much of our attention, and understandably so. But Nick Bolton and Willie Gay Jr., if they're both healthy down the stretch, they both seem like they're primed. I think Nick Bolton, in a way, is already like the reason why I didn't put him as a post-bye week breakout, because Nick Bolton's been breaking out all season. Right, from the minute he started in week one, Nick Bolton's been one of the best defenders on this team. It's just now everybody else has caught up.
Since they've gotten healthy, yeah. Nick Bolton has fallen down the pecking order, so to speak, the same way that at times when we thought last year, maybe this is when they finally start giving Willie Gay a little bit more playing time. They move him ahead. It never happened. Well, it's happening this year. I think he's like 30 snaps behind what he did all of last season.
Mm-hmm.
He is very clearly the guy who has ascended. So maybe it'll take another year. Maybe it will be until next year when Nick Bolton moves ahead of Ben Neiman and fingers crossed Anthony Hitchens isn't on the roster anymore. But yeah, that's exciting. The idea that even though I know we sort of, at least I did, I sort of crushed the Chiefs for having seen nothing, for having gotten nothing early, because Nick Bolton kind of struggled a little bit out the gates. He's been fantastic lately. Willie Gay couldn't get on the field. It seemed like you didn't get anything for those back-to-back second-round picks. Well, now, all of a sudden, fast forward a couple months, it looks like you may have your two starting linebackers for the next foreseeable future, honestly.
913-576-7610, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line from the 816. Nick Bolton was leading the league in tackles, for God's sakes, guys. Was Rookie of the Month, Defensive NFL Rookie of the Month. That's why I didn't put him as a breakout post bye week, because I feel like he's done enough for me. It's not the breakout. He hasn't had a bad first half or bad first 11 weeks of the season. He's already been there. That's why I didn't put him. That's also why I didn't put Chris Jones. Like, Chris Jones has already had that 3.5 sack performance. Like, that's why I didn't, honestly, that's why I didn't put Willie Gay. I get the thought process. Like, that's why I didn't put him, because I think he's been playing at a high level.
Yeah, but Nick Bolton's just not going to play enough.
Yeah, it's why I didn't put Legarius Sneed. Legarius Sneed's already been breaking out the last couple weeks and looking like one of the better corners in all of football. So that's why he wasn't a post-bye week breakout candidate for me. It's the same reason why I think none of us said Frank Clark, because he's already been breaking out the last couple weeks. Now, I'm not saying you don't want to keep seeing him do that, of course. But if Frank Clark hadn't shown anything, he would be maybe a guy you would mention in this conversation. But Frank Clark, the last 3 or 4 weeks, been having his best stretch in a Chiefs uniform.
Well, Nick Bolton, you can just look at the numbers. Since Anthony Hitchens has gotten healthy and returned to the field, I mean, Nick Bolton's playing time has decreased significantly. He's only played 19 snaps in each of the last two games. That's less than Ben Neiman. That's less than Anthony Hitchens. That's less than Willie Gay Jr. The Chiefs play who they trust. They trust Anthony Hitchens to be where he needs to be. They trust Ben Neiman on third downs. You can disagree with it. I disagree with it. But there is a tried and true track record here.
Well, right now it's hard.
The Chiefs playing the veterans over the young guys. And Willie Gay Jr. last year is a perfect example of it.
Yeah, and Willie Gay last year, the knowledge of the playbook, and so they didn't trust him in that regard. I'm surprised Nick Bolton hasn't played more, but right now it's hard to complain, right? I mean, this defense led by Steve Spagnuolo, the last month has been just about as good as anybody on defense in football. It's as simple as that. So it's nobody is talking as much about Dan Sorensen or Ben Neiman. One, they've also taken some snaps away from Sorensen, as we know, but if the defense is playing at this level, you're going to have a hard time having anybody complain about who's getting more snaps. Suddenly, the snap counts may not actually be a big topic of conversation when the defense is playing at this level. It's simple as that.
How does it work? If they win, we don't get to complain at all, right?
If the snap count wise, if the Chiefs defense keeps playing like this, I don't give a damn who's getting more snaps. Do you? If the Chiefs defense is playing like a top five defense, which they have the last 3 weeks, then I don't care what the snap counts are. It doesn't matter. The results are there.
Okay. Yes, but also,
like, I don't want to talk. Like,
but you, also,
on,
okay,
on
but
Monday,
yeah, you're right.
If the Chiefs beat the Broncos on Sunday and the defense has another stellar performance, on Monday and Tuesday, I have zero interest in having a conversation about Ben Neiman getting more snaps than Nick Bolton at that
point. Okay, then fine. Okay, I won't complain. I won't complain. How about that? I'll make you a deal. Okay. I'm not going to complain. I promise I won't complain. But as a statement of fact, I will present to you that Nick Bolton should be playing more than Ben
Neiman. Okay, fair.
A statement of fact.
I
a complaint.
I don't disagree.
And you know what?
I don't disagree.
I will double that for Juan Thornhill and Dan Sorensen.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Not a complaint.
I don't disagree.
And we don't have to have a conversation about it. I'm just throwing it out there. You do what you want with that information.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. On this show, you know my feeling on Nick Bolton all season long. I was trying to convince, I believe, both of you for much of the early part of the season that Nick Bolton was a good draft pick. So I have all the faith in the world that he will end up being someone that gets some more playing time at some point still this season. But it's just not gonna be a complaint, Nick.
Totally not complaining.
Thinking of Brett Veach, huh? Have you taken a look back? We were having multiple conversations about trade deadline guys, options at the trade deadline. Guys have been moving to different teams. And now if you look, out of all the moves in season, not even the week of the trade deadline, all the moves in season, with the exception of maybe one and we can talk about, has there been a better pickup than what the Chiefs were able to do with Melvin Ingram in season this year? Find me a guy that a team picked up either on the waiver wire or through trade in season this year that's been better than Melvin Ingram. Not just pass rushers, any position. And we can start with pass rusher. At one point, we were going back and forth about Whitney Mercilus. He's now hurt with Green Bay, non-factor. Von Miller, he's been hurt, not doing anything with the Rams.
Jalen Smith
got picked up by the Packers and cut, and I don't even know where the hell he is right now. Maybe a free agent still. Odell Beckham Jr., they're what, 0-3 with him? He got a touchdown. Congratulations.
Yeah, big moment.
Uh-huh, yeah. Zach Ertz maybe had a big-time game in his first game with the Cardinals. Now the Cardinals are weird to judge because Kyler's been out for a month or whatever. Who am I missing? Stephon Gilmore earlier in the season got traded from the Patriots to the Panthers. The Panthers' defense has been fine, but actually not as good as what they were prior to that, believe
it
or not.
How about the Patriots, and the Patriots defense since they traded Stephon
Gilmore? And the Patriots' defense is as good as it gets in football right now. Melvin Ingram, I believe, is the best in-season acquisition of this entire season for any team.
Okay, I wouldn't disagree with you, but a little trivia for you, okay? Do you have any idea what his stat line with the Chiefs looks like? It's been 3 games. Do you have any idea the stats that he's accrued?
Read them to me.
Tackles for loss, 0. Sacks, 0. Tackles, 3. I do not disagree with you that he has been incredibly impactful, but it's just funny to me to look at the fact that he hasn't even had to.
He hasn't even had to produce. It's the pressure rate, though, and the ability to
show how good he's been.
It's the pressure rate, because if anybody's watching, and this is why box score watching is very dangerous. And football, anybody, you don't watch the game, you're like, oh, let me just look at the box score. Oh, that guy had a great game. That guy didn't. We know that's just not how you should judge football games or any sport for the most part. And if you've watched any of the Chiefs games the last 3 weeks, you know that Melvin Ingram has had a significant impact on these games, plain and simple. One, just from where you've been able to line up Chris Jones because of Melvin Ingram. Without Melvin Ingram, I'm not convinced Chris Jones is playing as much as the inside. You know, it seems obvious to all of us that he should have been. But I don't think with Melvin Ingram not on the team, I don't believe we're seeing Chris Jones still play. A lot of it hasn't been Frank Clark's play better. All of it has contributed. But Melvin Ingram, even if the sack number is not there, just look at pressure rate and look how he's also allowed Chris Jones and Frank Clark to have the type of breakouts they've had the last couple weeks. So, yeah, I'm looking at Melvin Ingram. The sack number may not be there, Nick. But overall, if you've watched the Chiefs, you know the impact. Have you watched any of the Rams games this season? Has Von Miller stood out at all? They've had him primetime games, so I know you've watched him. Has he stood out?
No.
Beckham had the one catch, okay, for a touchdown. Congratulations. Whitney Mercilus hadn't been on the damn field for the Packers. Jalen Smith hadn't been on the field for the Packers. Stephon Gilmore, it's hard to say. He had a pick, I think, for the Panthers at one point. But Stephon Gilmore's also like a defensive player of the year can in the past, or a defensive player of the year.
Yeah, I mean, Melvin Ingram, the biggest thing that he's been able to do, as you said, is just allowing everybody else to play in their correct positions. And now all of a sudden you don't have to play Mike Dana as much, right? You're putting your best players on the field, And at no point did we ever need Melvin Ingram to come in and be productive. That was never the question. And I don't think that was ever really the goal.
Yeah. It's crazy, though. You read that, what you read about the stats, though. Like that, again, if you just look at the stats, you're like, he's brought nothing.
But everybody.
But that's just so not true.
Everybody who's watched has noticed when he's on the field.
And his snap count went up last week, too. He was, because his first couple games in Kansas City, like 46%. I remember the first play of the game against the Green Bay Packers. One of the first plays of the game, Melvin Ingram his first snap had an impact, got near Jordan Love, because it wasn't Rodgers, it was Jordan Love. So he's had an impact. Now he's up to 66% of the snaps on this defense as he had last week against the Dallas Cowboys. So, I mean, I'm looking at what Brett Veach did in season. I know the Josh Gordon one hasn't panned out, but those are flyers. You're not going to hit on all of them. Melvin Ingram is good of, and I think the best, in-season acquisition of any team in football so far in 2021. And he gave up a six-round pick for him.
Josh Gordon catching strays, huh? I thought we weren't talking about
him. Someone needs to help get him a ride. Did you see that? He said he was struggling to get an Uber to practice. He tweeted out, was it yesterday?
He has an expired license, so he can't
drive.
He says,
I live so far away, it takes every Uber at least 16 to 25 minutes. They tax in every trip. Hashtag expired license. Hashtag need car help.
Well, I think probably first route of action for me would be to get that license updated. Head on down to the DMV. Mm-hmm.
Honest question, is he able to get one?
What's that supposed to mean?
No, because of some of the issues. I have honestly.
What issues?
I have no idea. Stop, Nick. I have no idea if he's actually able to get one. If not, why wouldn't he?
They don't let guys who smoke weed get driver's licenses anymore.
It's not just that. I don't want to have a whole Josh Gordon conversation. Everybody has this perception that Josh Gordon, the only issue he's ever had was smoking weed. That is so not true, unfortunately, for him.
They did a GQ article on him. Back when he was coming back with the Browns, he said he was drinking vodka before high school games.
Yeah, well, there's been a long documented issue. I don't even want to get in. That's not even the point of bringing up Josh Gordon.
Oh, what was it? What was the point? I don't remember.
You brought him up and said, why is he catching strays?
Yeah.
I just mentioned how he wasn't a good in-season acquisition, but Melvin Ingram has been.
I disagree.
Stating facts.
I disagree with the implication or the outright statement that he hasn't been a good offseason acquisition in season.
You disagree?
I disagree vehemently.
Why?
You know why?
What has he done?
He's playing. He's playing He's playing more than DeMarcus Robinson.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, the Chiefs view him as being a better player than those guys. If you can bring somebody in mid-season and get on the field, they get on the field for you.
Text line also.
That means you have improved your team.
Text line also, and I had the same question. I said, Nick, are you eating? Because when we were talking, all I heard was crumbling. What are you eating over there?
I've got a little protein bar. I had to set it down. I tried to set it down quietly.
Not so quietly.
Is it distracting you?
I heard it. I was going to move on, and then the text line was commenting on it, so I felt like if it was distracting to them, then I wanted to know
it was. I thought you said that the NFL has a car service for all the guys.
They do.
Can't
they
Josh
do.
Gordon just take that?
I would think so,
Or are there limitations to it? It's like,
I don't know.
You can't take it every single day, dude.
Maybe that's what it is. They do have a car service. Maybe, can a player not pick them up?
You got any teammates living in the area?
Help them out. Get Josh Gordon to practice. He shouldn't have to be Ubering every day to practice.
You have 50-plus guys, I'm sure, who'd be willing to swing by.
Can't they, like just get a personal driver in general? Like, just pay him a flat rate each week? Whenever you call, I'm there. Nick Schwert will pick you up.
The NFL, with the resources available to these NFL teams, it seems shockingly archaic and outdated that Josh Gordon has to pull out his cell phone and book an Uber every single day to get to... Like, there's nobody in that facility who can give this guy a hand.
How far away is he living? He's acting like he's living in Lawrence.
Arrowhead's way out there.
It is. He's acting like he's living in Lawrence or something, and he's got to drive to Raytown.
I mean, Arrowhead is a bit of a trek. If he's living downtown.
If he's downtown, it's not that far. That's where a lot of the players live, is downtown.
Okay, but...
For an Uber.
What do you think an Uber is? 20 bucks?
Look, I have
20 bucks there, 20 bucks back. It adds up, dude.
I don't think it's the money as much as it's the weight that's
he
causing
said it's
the tax.
He said the taxing.
But it's because he's 15.
You're saying it's like mentally taxing?
No, I think he's talking about the actual tax, the bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And he's a big guy, so you know he's getting Uber XL. He's not climbing into the back of a Camry.
You think he's picking the luxury option?
Dude, for sure.
Why wouldn't you?
You think he's getting in the back of a hatchback? Absolutely not. That is, what do they call it? Uber Black?
I would hope he's getting the top of the line Uber each day.
So that's probably $80 a day.
I'm just hoping why can't a teammate drop him off at his crib? Why can't he do that?
Maybe he's too afraid to ask. Maybe he's like embarrassed to ask.
But he just tweeted it to everybody, essentially. I don't think so, Nick.
That argument sort of collapsed on itself.
Maybe Creed Humphrey can help him out. Because Creed Humphrey, rookie of the year campaign, stronger than ever. Hashtag Creed is good. Did you see the teaser video?
Well, yeah. I was involved in the teaser video.
Do you have it?
I have the teaser video. This is not the full video. Are we allowed to play this on air?
The teaser video, not the full video. This needs to just be the 5-second clip. For those of you that have supported the Creed halftime show reenactment from 20 years ago, we had mentioned last week, you guys were texting me when I was off, that the cameo request had been sent to Scott Stapp.
Yeah, what was that experience like, by the way? Because that had to be weird, getting these mentions and these text messages and then getting in your car and hearing us talk about it without us really running it by you, whether, because we were volunteering you for a lot of stuff as well.
So one part I caught, I was driving around and I tuned in real quick, and I did catch the part about me on a zip line flying through the halftime show. So I said I'm in, shirtless. I'm in for it. And we had put together money I saw, and we were texting. And so this is part of the video where the $300 went, $314 went.
Chiefs Kingdom, what is up? Scott Stapp from Creed here. Chiefs.
So we can't play any more than
that.
That's it. I can't play any more than that.
It's longer than that.
It's much longer than that.
But we don't want to spoil anything. That's just the 5 seconds. We both watched the whole deal.
That is where your hard-earned money went to. Now, that's going to be essentially a part of a bigger video. This is just going to be sort of the introduction, then the reenactment of the halftime show, which we have raised thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Literally
thanks to
thousands.
You. Thanks to the best listeners in the world who, for some reason, are deciding to fund this stupid, stupid idea that we came up with last week. And we are so thankful for that.
Cody was even just texting us a second ago. We have the high school locked in. I won't mention it yet, but we have the high school locked in for the field that we're going to use for the halftime show.
So we got a venue. That's a big.
It is 100% in. Also, we're working on the color guard and like the flag and band for a couple of the elements as well. And we're going to have a riser set up. Things are moving. Things are moving in the right direction for the Creed Humphrey Rookie of the Year.
We have been talking to a zipline company. We have been talking to a sound company to help us with some of the accoutrement that we're going to need on stage.
The Arrowhead logo, good to go.
My dad, Chris Schwert, taking care of the Arrowhead logo. I was in deep negotiations with him over the weekend. We've got all of that ironed out. All he wanted in return for his services, a Cody and Gold t-shirt.
That's it?
A Cody and Gold t-shirt.
Oh, we can make that happen.
Size XL.
We're a little low, but we'll make it happen.
Okay.
For your dad, you know? We'll make it happen. We do need to get some more shirts printed up, don't we?
We do.
But t-shirts, if that's all he wants, man, that's it. Okay.
Just one enough t-shirt.
That's our easiest thing to lock in.
It's going to make us a giant Arrowhead logo to put on that stage.
I was upset. I looked at the latest Rookie of the Year odds today. Just no respect for Creed Humphrey.
Where's he at now?
So he was at 150-1,
that's
right?
Pretty far down there.
And I'm assuming this is because they're altering the odds because now there's this massive movement here in Kansas City with our show. But they took it.
Wait,
they took him off the board.
Wait, so we're being punished?
No. I think they're readjusting the odds. They're clearly seeing the movement. I'm assuming at some point they will put new odds up that'll be far better than 150-1. They took his name off the list. You can't even bet on Creed Humphrey anymore. That's how popular the movement is. You can't even go on there and bet for Creed Humphrey to be Rookie of the Year.
You want to explain something to me? Creed Humphrey, off the books, was at 150-1.
Uh-huh.
You know who is at 150-1 currently?
Yes.
Kadarius Toney, wide receiver for the New York Giants. He has 35 catches, 392 yards, has zero touchdowns. Let me ask you this. Second two-part question. Is Kadarius Toney, is he like on the cusp of being an all-pro this year? Is he the top-graded player at his position this year?
Not even close. Not even close. So not even in his rookie class, not in his own team right now.
Like, so explain to me how he has better odds of winning rookie of the year.
Disrespect.
Creed Humphrey does.
But the fact they took Creed Humphrey off the board, it must be they're feeling the movement. They know something big's happening.
Scott Stapp have anything to say about Kadarius Toney?
Hashtag Creed is good. They know that there's going to be a huge push, a huge movement on the way. And it started with that little teaser video you heard from the band Creed. That's the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Coming up next, we'll get you what's trending, of course, and what on earth is going on with quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.